What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Wildlife Control Podcast. My name is Kyle Waltz. I am the president of Conserve. We are a pest and wildlife removal business based out of Birmingham, Alabama, with locations across the Southeast. We operate under numerous different brands, depending on where you find us. We've grown quite a bit over the past couple of years through partnerships and acquisitions, as well as organically. And we are in the process of building a nationally recognized brand. On today's episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing one of my business partners, Frank Sisa. Frank has started two different wildlife removal businesses. Several years back, he started a company called Wildman Wildlife Removal based out of Durham, North Carolina. Conserve acquired that business in May of this year. And Frank has remained a silent partner in the business, helping us with the transition and reaping the benefits of remaining a shareholder as we grow that company and his value. After Frank sold that to us, he moved to Charleston, South Carolina, his roots, and is now building Wando Wildlife Removal. I think one of the most impressive things about working with Frank and taking over Wildman was his attention to detail and his high customer service skills. It's really produced a lot of leads for us, a lot of referrals, a lot of word of mouth, and I think you'll really appreciate this interview.
This conference will now be recorded.
Frank, really appreciate you getting on here today and making some time for us. I really wanted to get you on here to kind of hear your story from, you know, the beginning when you first started your business and your background before that, and talk a little bit about what it was like selling your business to us and kind of that whole transition. So how did you get started in our industry, and tell us a little bit about your background?
Hey, Kyle, thanks for having me on. So I've been obsessed with wildlife since I was a little kid, and always wanted to be a game warden. I decided that when I was about 13. So I went to Clemson University here in South Carolina to study wildlife biology and pursue that goal. As I got out of college, like around my senior year, I kind of realized that maybe being a game warden wasn't the job for me, you know, working when everybody else is hunting and fishing. It just didn't seem like the best route for me. My senior year, I took a class called Wildlife Damage Management that was taught by the South Carolina Director of USDA Wildlife Services, APHIS. And it just seemed like the coolest job in the world. You know, I got to help them drag deer out of a neighborhood up around Clemson that were, you know, shot at night by sharpshooters, and trap beavers, and, you know, chase geese off of nursing homes, and all this stuff that just seemed so cool to me. And I think that that's when I decided I wanted to use my love of wildlife to help people who didn't love wildlife as much solve conflicts. So my first job out of college, I worked for a medium to large pest control firm here in South Carolina that was based out of South Carolina. And I did that for 4 years. I did a little bit of wildlife control for them, but I did a lot of commercial pest control, grocery stores, schools, hospitals, all that. And that, as much as pest control wasn't really my thing, I never cared all that much about roaches and spiders and things. I did enjoy the job overall, and that's where I gained a lot of my customer service background. So that was really good for me. And then I did that for 4 years. Around 2015, I went to work for a company in Columbia, South Carolina, a wildlife-only company, and kind of got to be the field service manager, kind of a glorified technician there. You know, I really got to interact with customers, sell jobs, do the exclusion, get wildlife out, and really learn the wildlife side of things specifically. At Gregory, like I said, we did some trapping and stuff, but we weren't really sure how to do high quality wildlife removal and prevention. And then in 2017, my wife got a job in Durham, North Carolina, and we moved up there. I started Wildman Wildlife Removal in July of 2017. And when I first started that, I was, working at a restaurant at night, but I slowly got the ball rolling there. I didn't know how to start my own business, but I just did it anyway. And I slowly got the ball rolling there. I didn't know anybody there, so it took a while to get my name out. But by 2019 or so, I was rolling pretty good and had a few good years there. And then I sold that business to you in 2021.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you did a great job. One of the most impressive things, and we'll kind of get a little bit more into what it's like for us to run it right now, but one thing I noticed is the high number of referrals that you get there, which exceeds any other branch that we have, the high number of 5-star reviews, and just that repeat business, which was super impressive. The quality of work that you have, just super impressive compared to a lot of other businesses that we've looked at. So clearly that was something that really helped you grow there for a little bit. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in 2017, I maybe bought some Google AdWords for 6 months or so when I was getting things started. But then I didn't spend any money on advertising after that. It really was all word of mouth and referrals. And I really prided myself on that and still do, just doing everything we can do to take care of our customers to the best of our ability. And if you do that and people trust you, then they're going to spread the word and they'll get you to work on their second home and get you to work on their brother's home. And they'll refer to you all your neighbors. And I think that that's that kind of organic growth is really the best kind of growth, and free leads are the best kind of leads.
That's right. Best compliment you can get is a referral. Yeah,
That's right.
and selling to a referral versus selling to someone from a Google ad is completely different because you're
Oh,
not a
absolutely.
stranger. Just the closing rate's got to be, I don't know what the analytics are on it, but they got to be so much higher
Oh,
than,
absolutely. It's like when somebody's neighbor told them that you did a great job and that they should call you, they're much, much more likely to buy from you.
Yeah.
And they're just much more accepting of price and much more trusting of what you're telling them.
Yeah. So when you got started, how long were you working at the restaurant?
I worked in that restaurant from right when we moved to North Carolina until, I want to say I did it for about a year and a half. I think I quit in January of 2019. I was working 4 nights a week. I'd have to get in at 4:30 in the afternoon, and I made that work for a long time, but I eventually got to a point where I really needed those few extra hours in every day to be able to take care of all my customers.
Yeah. So knowing what you know now, if you could go back to when you started, because I've seen what you've done in a very short amount of time in Charleston, what would you tell somebody when they're first starting out their business? Should they have a secondary income or can they hit the ground running?
I think you can hit the ground running. There's a lot of different ways you can generate leads. When I started that company, I slapped some magnets on my Toyota Tacoma and I would just kind of drive around. I mean, I would honestly drive around hoping somebody would see the truck and call me.
Yeah,
And
not the best strategy.
that's not a great way to get leads. So, there's a million things you could do that I should have done. I mean, I should have called every property management company in the area and just said, "Hey, how do I become a vendor with you guys?"
Yeah.
Some of those property management companies out there ended up becoming some of my best clients, and they'll really pick you up when the leads aren't coming in or the organic, referrals aren't coming in. Those property management companies, it's good to just be on their list. There were all kinds of different ways that I could buy leads that I just wasn't aware of. So Yeah, I just that's my advice to everybody. Don't just slap magnets on your truck and think that the leads are going to come pouring in.
Pick up the phone. So yeah, you start your business day one. You know, maybe you got fired somewhere, you quit your job, you got tired of your boss. You start your business day one, just hammer the phones. Because you could probably, I always tell people this, if you sit down and call every single property management company in town, it's going to take you like several days probably to call them all and to give them all the paperwork. But in my experience, because I've done this many times, in my experience, if you dedicate one day to calling property managers or maybe it's pest control companies, whatever, to get referrals and get business, you will make a sale that day, or at least get a lead to go run to, you know, put a proposal in on.
Oh
Does
yeah.
that, I mean, I'm sure you've seen that now that you've been out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When here in Charleston, South Carolina, where I'm at now, that was one of the first things I did. First week I started the company, I just reached out to every realtor I knew in the area and just told them, "Hey, I'm open for business." And I had people reaching out to me that day.
Yeah.
And I immediately was able to go out and do inspections from day one. Just by letting everyone know, like, hey, I'm here. This is what I do. If you're selling a house and a bunch of rat droppings come up during the inspection, give me a call and I'll go take a look at it for free. And we got leads that day. So
Yeah.
definitely just do whatever you can do to get your name out there.
Yeah, because every I've always looked at this because when I first started, everybody was telling me, when are you going to get a real job? Clearly, this isn't working, and I was an idiot. So I wasn't making any money. I was losing money every month. But I always thought, okay, if I were to get another job, a part-time job, that's less time that I can put into my business. And it's just going to take me longer to get there. So I'd rather just rip the band-aid off, suffer now as much as I have to suffer, and get over the hump, and I'll catch a break one day. And I did. It took me a while, but I
Yeah,
eventually caught a break.
I think that's a good way to approach it. And I'll be honest, like I think part of the reason I stayed at the restaurant as long as I did is because I was afraid. Like I was a little bit afraid to be completely on my own, working for myself, no safety net, no guarantees of any other kind of income. That intimidated me at that time. And so I held on to working in a restaurant at night a little longer than I should have. And I probably didn't put the effort into growing my business because of that. So.
Yeah, I mean, completely normal to be afraid, right? You're going into the unknown. And for some people, if you have a family, if you have a, I mean, right now you have a wife and a kid. I'm sure if you had a child back then, things might have been a little bit different. You were married though, but a lot of people, they're starting out and they might have several kids. They might be putting their kids through college. So to be fearless and say, I'm not going to have a part-time job, that's easier said than done. I would say you still should do it though. Still go all in because you're going to get there a lot faster. It's just, you can't get back time. Once you use it, that's it. You're not going to go back
Absolutely.
and do the right thing again. So yeah, pick up the phones, hammer the phones, and that's a good way to get off the ground. So you ran Wild Man starting in July 2017, and then I guess we eventually spoke for the first time. Do you remember when that was? Was it in 2019 or
I believe
2020
it
maybe?
was. I believe it was 2019. I was just trying to learn more about the industry and the business and the business side of things. And I was trying to find an old podcast I used to listen to that I thought was called the Wildlife Control Podcast. I can't remember the guy who did it. And I was trying to find that podcast and I stumbled upon yours and I listened to a bunch of episodes and I was like, huh, maybe this guy like knows what he's talking about. And
Nobody
after
really knows still.
it was some long weekend or something. I can't remember if it was like Memorial Day or something like that, and I was just really focusing on the business and trying to get a little more organized, especially like on the administrative side of things. I think for all of us in this business, it can be easy to just be in the field all the time and kind of let some things slip. And
Oh, yeah.
I sent you a message on Instagram, just like thanking you for the podcast and letting you know that I was putting into action some of the things you were talking about. And Yeah, and we just kind of chatted back and forth after that, and we actually met up in person one time. You were happen to be cruising through the Raleigh-Durham area.
Yeah, I have something to admit though. I wasn't cruising through Raleigh-Durham.
You weren't.
No. I was like, I'm gonna go over here and meet this guy, Frank, and see if I can meet up with him and try to build a relationship with him. Because it was clear that you were on the right track and you were doing something. And we were, 2019, we were looking at how can we do more acquisitions? How do we get more connected in the industry? And it's just by meeting people like you. Like we want to help people. That's why we do this podcast. So we want to reach out, help as many people as we can, build relationships with people. High tide rises all boats, and we knew that would create an opportunity for us to grow our business as well. And it's worked out very well ever since we started doing that. A lot of people told me not to do this podcast, the Wildlife Control podcast, because like you're giving up all your secrets. And there's so many guys that I talk to that have much larger businesses than me, and some of them smaller, but they will not get on here. I'll invite them on here and they will not. They're like, nope, I like to hide behind the curtain. They don't want anybody to know their secrets. They think that, they're gonna lose everything, I guess. I don't really know. I have nothing to hide though, so I appreciate you willing to get on here. And I guess so we talked in 2019, we kept in touch, and I don't remember. Did we ever talk about you selling your business when I had met? I think I had met you up in person in 2020 in a Home Depot parking lot, if that's right.
Yeah, we did have a long discussion one time, for 45 minutes or so over the phone, and you kind of told me about what you were doing and what your goals were at that time, moving forward and trying to acquire businesses and kind of put them under your umbrella. And I think at the time you just told me to keep growing it and give you a call down the road.
Yeah. So eventually that situation happened. So your wonderful wife got a job opportunity back in your hometown of Charleston, South Carolina, and you made the decision that it would be best to put Wildman on the market and exit that business. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I was trying to figure out what to do with my business. And, I did a lot of research into trying to figure out what the business was worth. And a lot of what I found was that a business with one person, which is the owner, who does everything, has a little less value than a business that operates on its own independently of its owner. And especially in the wildlife business, where we don't have necessarily the amount of recurring revenue that a lot of other industries have. A lot of times we go in and do one big job and we get the bats out. And then if we do our jobs correctly, the customer never sees us again.
Yeah.
And those one shot type businesses just are not as valuable as a company that has a couple of million dollars in recurring revenue every single year, like guaranteed to come in. So I was a little stumped on what to do with the business. I didn't want to just shut everything down because I had customers that I had built relationships with, and I had told them, you have a warranty for, this long, and I didn't want to just shut it down and not honor my word to them. So I kind of weighed my options. I reached out to some local companies in the Raleigh-Durham area. I reached out to one company who's a good friend of mine and offered to sell it to him. He thought about it, but he didn't seem all that interested. And then I reached out to you and we went from there.
Yeah, I bet they regret it now.
Yeah, probably.
So eventually we entertained that, and I think it worked out really, really well. And one thing that we do differently here at Conserve compared to most companies is we give the seller the option to retain a little bit of equity in the business for a lot of different reasons. We probably don't have time to go over all the reasons. So we can get into that, but So what was the experience like for you from the part where we decided, okay, we're gonna take this business through due diligence and give you a billion different questions to answer, and we're gonna ask you for a bunch of documents that you don't ever have and you've never heard of before. What was that like for you? Was that tough? Because I've sold a couple businesses now myself, and it's never fun going through all that.
It's not fun, but it wasn't the most difficult thing in the world. Obviously, if my record keeping would have been a little better, it would have made it easier as far as, being able to provide things like revenue by county or, just a complete customer list. You just kind of go through the list one by one, and it wasn't all that difficult. I got all that information to you. I guess y'all went through it all and made me an offer. I accepted it. We did meet up in person, I think, at a coffee shop and talked about things a little bit more. I was at the time, I was just like, I'm gonna sell you the whole business, Kyle. And you were like, you sure you don't want to retain a little bit of equity? And I thought about it and I was like, maybe I should do that. And so I did retain 25% equity in Wildman as a silent partner with you guys, and I'm glad I did that.
Nice. So, what was it like from, 'cause it's kind of a weird feeling, right? When you run in a business all on your own and then somebody else all of a sudden is kind of taking control of it and you don't really have a lot of say so in it, but you stayed on for a little bit and continue to work in the business and you're very helpful, in getting people trained. So what was that like for you?
It was a little bit intimidating at first. I think all of us that own businesses and run businesses ourselves probably do that for some reason. Part of the reason I know that I do it is I always think I just know better than everybody else, and I just have a lot of trouble listening to authority. Fortunately, you made it a smooth transition. You trusted me to just do my job and to take care of the customer. So in the brief time when I stayed on board and was technically working for you just kind of turned me loose and let me do my thing as I was doing it before. So I appreciated that. It made it a lot easier. It was definitely tough saying goodbye to some customers. I built some good relationships with customers over the years, and doing things a different way or showing up to a customer's house where I'd previously been there and been like using my techniques and pricing and all that, and then moving over to different contracts and different pricing. It was a little different, but it was overall a smooth transition.
Nice. Good. I'm glad to hear that. So now, moving on, you are a silent partner in a business. And I don't know if you own any other businesses besides your wildlife company in Charleston. So now you're the owner of at least two businesses. One that, you get a check every month or two, in the form of a dividend or a distribution, whatever you want to call it. So what is that like? How is it getting a surprise payment every so often?
It's really great. It's kind of just like found money every month, and I'm always excited to see the numbers and see what you guys are doing up there. So that's great. I mean, I recommend it to anyone. If you're gonna sell a business, if you can retain some equity, then as a silent partner especially, then that's the way to go. I don't have any responsibilities with Wildman. In our operating agreement, it says I do not have any responsibilities. If I get an email or something like that to my personal email from an old client or something, I forward it over to you guys. That's pretty much the extent of my involvement. And I'm always happy to do that. I am getting paid, so it's in my best interest to help out where I can. That's great. It's also, I feel like it's been a benefit to me down here when you tell people, oh, I also own a wildlife company in North Carolina. They're like, wow, this guy really knows what he's doing. He's a multi-state operation here, even though that might be a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it's always interesting. We've made a lot of offers over the past year on a lot of different businesses of how many people have no interest in, I call it mailbox money, of making money passively. And, if I have a choice of being a silent partner in, let's say, if I have a choice of being a 10% partner in 20 companies where I'm a silent partner, or 100% owner of one big company, I'll pick the silent partner any day, because I don't have to do anything. You can't really put a
Absolutely.
price on free time.
Absolutely. It's like in a lot of ways, it's actually changed my whole outlook on life. I've been trying to explain this to different relatives that I have a pretty good thing going here, and that ultimately I'd like to own a part of four or five or six businesses, not necessarily all in the wildlife space. Because if I did that, I could probably do what I want to do, which is mostly duck hunt.
I was about to say hunt based off of what's behind you. Yeah,
Yes,
no, I'm right
exactly.
there with you, man. Yeah, you can't put a price on that. I mean, that is the best thing ever as a business owner, is to earn passive money. And that's what I try to get out to everybody as often as possible. Everybody is so focused on, I got to go to work to make a living, and that's not the truth. You need to go to work to make money, and then take your money and then get your money to work for you. That should be the goal, is to get the money to work for you. You shouldn't be working for money. So yeah, once you figure that out, it changes everything, everything. So I'm really glad that you did that. It's helpful for us. Like you said, we can make sure that customer experiences are good, old customers, whatever. We still get to say that Frank is an owner of the business. And that helps when it's a really small company. No, I think it's been a great acquisition for us. Really, really enjoyed it. We have a great team up there running it. I'll be going back there for a company Christmas party here in a couple weeks. So yeah, it's a great thing. And now, so you went to Charleston, cashed out on Wildman, and you started up Wando. So tell us how that's going.
Yeah, I started a company here in July, Wando Wildlife Removal, and I already hired my first employee. He's actually a good friend of mine that I grew up with, that I brought on board to be a partner in the business and to help me grow it. And we've really hit the ground running. Things have slowed down a little bit here over the last few weeks as we kind of approach the holidays. But we just kind of started out reaching out, like I said, to a lot of realtors. Very fortunate to have a lot of family, friends, and connections down here, so we were really able to hit the ground running, and pretty much been slammed since the day we opened until now. Like I said, things have just now started to slow down over the last couple of weeks as we got close to Thanksgiving. Hopefully things will start to pick back up. We'll definitely get by in December. I know December can be a slow time in the wildlife business, but once we get past New Year's and everything, those squirrels will start nesting again and all that, and I'm sure things will pick right back up.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's really impressive that you're able to start there in July and get your first employee in a very short amount of time. And I'm assuming you've taken a lot of the stuff that you learned from Wildman and put that into Wando, and that's what allowed you guys to grow so fast. I want to talk to you about pricing. In our last podcast, we talked about pricing. And I remember the first day I went out in the field with you, and or the second day or something like that. We went out in the field just to kind of get an idea of like how you treated your customers and stuff like that, so we could replicate that and continue that there. And I remember going to a customer with you, I forget their name, and they had snakes in their yard. And they needed snake fencing. If you don't know what snake fencing is, everybody should sell it. Basically, you have a property that has some type of a fence, and we install a hardware cloth barrier basically around the perimeter to keep mostly venomous snakes out. So I told you, hey, Frank, we got to propose this customer for snake fencing. I don't know how much it was, $4,000, something like that. And do you remember what you told me?
I think I handed the proposal back to you and said, "You're going to have to pitch this one, Kyle. I can't do
Yeah.
it."
So, which is, it's so funny to me, because we run into this kind of stuff all the time with people who are with a business and they just weren't used to charging what we charge, but we're not like super highly profitable. I mean, we're a profitable business, but it's not like, you know, I'm not over here hiding money in my wall. So like for a lot of guys that are worried about increasing their prices, do you have any advice to them? Because right now we're dealing with inflation, right, across the country. And if
Absolutely.
there's ever a time to increase your prices, it's right now. What do you tell those people?
I would tell people if you're not charging enough, you're really just cheating yourself. I definitely have learned that lesson. When I was a one-man operation in North Carolina, I was charging probably half of what I should have been charging. And as I look back, you know, I made a good living. I'm not going to complain. But as I look back, I could have either A, made twice as much money, or B, made the same amount of money and done half the amount of work. And, you know, I was providing an exceptional level of service to my customers that was on par or better than any of my competitors and charging less than them. And so I was really cheating myself. And I think that a lot, especially a lot of like one man operators will charge less than larger companies. And I definitely understand that. Now that I've actually brought on an employee, you start to see how numbers really start to add up. Once
Oh yeah.
you're matching, you know, taxes, payroll taxes, getting additional trucks. I mean, right now I just bought a brand new Tacoma for this business, base model Tacoma. You couldn't even haggle with the dealership. They tell you how much it's going to be, and you have to put in an order and wait for a couple of months. And then insurance isn't cheap. Liability insurance isn't cheap. Commercial truck policies aren't cheap. Labor's not cheap. Gas isn't cheap. There's really nothing is cheap. And everything has gone up. Just basic products that I started using when I got in this business 6 years ago, everything's 20% more than it was, if not more than that. I mean, I swear I can go into Lowe's every day and buy a piece, you know, some caulk or something that I use all the time, and the price has gone up by a dollar. So if you think that there's even a chance that you're not charging enough, you're probably not. And you're really, the
Yeah.
only person you're hurting is yourself.
Yeah. So you said you could have either been making twice as much as you were making, or you could have been making the same amount of money in half the amount of time.
That is correct. I
So.
mean, if you think about it, so I think that I struggle with people telling me no. I just want every person that I pitch a job to say yes. But ultimately, you know, would you rather have five jobs for $500, or would you rather have one job for $2,500? I'm going to take
Yeah.
one job every time because it's less driving and it's less work. So, and it's not like I'm telling people, hey, you need to rip your customers off. You should be charging what the other companies in your area are charging. And I guarantee you that the larger companies that have all the employees and the trucks and things, they have to charge the prices they're charging to be profitable at all. Even for them to turn a 15% profit, they have to be charging what they're charging because the expenses get so high. So
Yeah.
there's no reason that a one-man operator shouldn't be doing the exact same thing.
Right. Yeah. We used to have a sales guy named James. And he used to say that sales starts when the customer says no. So anything that happens before then, you are not a salesperson, you're an order taker. No different than the cashier at Starbucks. So that's why we do sales training, right? Because we know, hey, we're not the cheapest in town. We have to show our value. You know, we have to be able to show our customers that we're going to do really professional exclusion. We're going to get the job done. Look, here's the good reviews. Here's the A plus with the Better Business Bureau, so on and so forth. And you know, in my opinion, if your customers are not saying wow or no way often, you're definitely not charging enough. If everybody's saying yes, you're definitely not charging enough. So you should have customers getting upset with you on your prices.
That's
And
exactly right. I mean, you should definitely be getting some no's or some, wow, I can't believe that, or let me think about it, or let me talk to my wife. You should be getting a lot of that. And you also need to be willing to talk them through it. A lot of times people don't understand the things that we're telling them. You can have a really finely tuned pitch, but when you start talking to somebody about, what a roof return is, it just goes in one ear and out the other a lot of times. And I'm always shocked at how many people, when I'm doing a walk around with them after the job has been completed and showing them all the work we've done, they had no idea that we were even going to do that work, even though it's been explained to them every step of the way. So I definitely think that, proving the value of the work you do to the customer when you're selling is very important. And the work that we do is incredibly valuable. People can't stand having critters in their house. It freaks them out. I mean, I can't count how many customers I had over the years that are like, I'm staying in a hotel until you take care of this. So, there's value in what we're doing. And like I said, everything that we do is very, all of our materials and equipment is expensive. So, charge what you need to charge. And you'll make more money, and or maybe you'll work a little bit less.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. So, what's next for Wando? What are you guys trying to accomplish over there?
So I set a personal goal, before I officially opened for business. I took a few weeks off just to get settled into the new house and everything. And when I was kind of writing out my business plan and my goals for this company, I'd like to grow it to $1 million in revenue by 2026. So that is the goal. We've got a ways to go. I think that, getting up to $250,000, which I think if we continued at the rate we're at now, that's probably about where we would be. I think that that's pretty easy to do, but to really push up and get above 500,000 is kind of the next hurdle, and then from there, getting up to 1 million. So, I mean, I guess the key to that is we just got to get in front of as many people as we can, and get our name out there and continue to establish our reputation in this area. Charleston, like a lot of places, is pretty saturated with wildlife companies. The competition
Yeah.
is stiff here. There's a lot of really great companies doing a lot of really high quality work. So we've got a grind ahead of us for sure, but I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Yeah, no, that is one of those markets. I think it's very doable, $1 million by 2026. And are you guys doing a lot of advertising right now, or is it just
I have not done any
organically?
advertising yet. I mean, we have purchased a few leads off of the app Thumbtack. I've been buying a few here or there. That's all we've done so far. As we continue to grow, we're going to start advertising, Google AdWords, things like that. I mean, I think we're going to have to. A lot of times it can just come down to being a numbers game, I think. Like when you break it down, if you can just pitch, if you can pitch $10,000 worth of work a day, that's
Yeah.
$50,000 a week. That's over $200,000 a month. And you kind of go from there. So we will start advertising eventually. Like I said, we were able to hit the ground running just because of the number of connections and friends and family that we have in the area. But that can only get you so far after you've critter proofed all your friends and family's houses.
Yeah,
You do got to
that's
find
right.
some strangers every now and again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's very doable. Man, I can't thank you enough for getting on here, and you built such a great business. Thank you for selling it to us. We love
Yeah,
running
absolutely.
it.
It's been, I mean, it was overall a great experience selling to you, Kyle. I mean, I was hesitant, I selling to you. I mean, I got a lawyer involved and everything because I don't know how to read operating agreements and all that, but the lawyer sorted everything out, and it was overall really smooth. And Wildman continues to do great. Y'all are getting a lot of great 5-star reviews and taking care of my existing customers and continuing to grow that business. So, I appreciate, everything that you're doing for our industry. I think that You bring kind of a fresh take on the way things have always been done. And you know, even as simple as just being friends with each other, you know, this is a small industry and we're all pretty like-minded. I think a lot of us like to hunt and fish. We like our families, we like wildlife. So I think that we would all get along if we ever sat down and actually talked. And you know, like you were saying earlier, you got nothing to hide. There's not a lot of secrets.
No.
I think everybody has. I think we all kind of know everything. So I appreciate what you're doing and reaching out to other people in the industry and doing your podcast. And you've been a good resource to me when I have a question or two.
Yeah,
So
man.
thank you.
No, I really appreciate it. Yeah, you know, it's crazy. Like you could sit down, I met with a guy last week, here in South Florida just to connect with other companies. You know, I live down here, so hey, let's get to know some of my local competitors down here. And it's amazing. You go sit and have lunch with somebody and they just tell you one sentence that is super helpful. You're like, oh, it's that aha moment, that light bulb moment. Had a guy talk to me last week about, you know, like we use lifts a lot, man lifts, boom lifts. So there's mats that you can put in those boom lifts that make it way more comfortable when you're up there for hours, if you're doing a big commercial building or something like that. So, you know, I learned that last week and had no idea about that. So our guys complained, hey, I'm up here on a lift for 6 hours. My ankles hurt, my feet hurt, because it is kind of funky being up there. So, you know, just
Yeah,
things like
absolutely.
that.
Yeah, it's always great to know, like to meet other guys in the industry because you learn about random tools or techniques that they're doing. They're just maybe just slightly different than yours or you know, we do a lot of roof work. So it's great to see how other people you know, tackle roof safety and ladder safety and all those things. And you know, I have a lot of good friends in this industry, and I don't think that there's any need for us to always be, oh, you know, their competition. I don't want to talk to that person. I think it's good to sit down and talk. And there's plenty of business to go around. So.
Yeah, what is I think Grant Cardone says your network is your net worth. So the more people you know, the more information you're going to consume. And you know, also when it comes to competition, your competitor might not do insulation. They might not do, you know, certain animal trapping or whatever. You know, a lot of us do things differently. And you can build a relationship with your competitor, they might pass you leads. So I
Yeah.
think there's a ton of value in that. And I've always been a fan of that ever since I figured that out years ago. We had a company back in, I think it was 2018, and we had reached out to them and I'd built a relationship with the owner. I don't even remember how it all happened, but all of a sudden, he was closing down his business and he's got all these leads coming in. He's like, here you go. And so we're generating, you know, hundreds of leads a month for free. So that was all from a cold call, you know, calling somebody up. So definitely is beneficial to get out there, not only to call, like you said, calling property managers, calling pest control companies, but call your competition. Because, you know,
Yeah.
if you're going to have a competition, you might as well be as close to them as possible. I'm sure there's some quote out there about being close to your competition. You
Yeah.
know, we don't have to be enemies. So.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was operating in North Carolina, I had several friends in the area that were other wildlife control operators that, you know, I had some that might be just one or two counties away that our territories might have some overlap in our service area, but we would give each other leads if it was like, you know, if I got a lead that was a little too far away for me to get to, pass it on to somebody else. He would do the same thing for me. Even had friends that had a direct, you know, their service area directly overlap with mine. And if I went out of town, I would give him some leads. If he went out of town, he would give me some leads. Or if we had a customer, sometimes I'd have customers that refused to let me use kill traps to get rid of rats, and I would pass those leads on to a friend who wouldn't use kill traps. Just little things like that. I mean, it never hurts to have friends in the business.
Absolutely. Yeah. Service area is another place that you might not go more than an hour away, and they'll go 2 hours away for calls. So yeah, no, that's super beneficial. Well, I won't keep you any longer, man. Really appreciate you and everything that you do with us and everything that you do in our industry as well. And I guess I don't have anything else to share to you.
No, I think we about covered it. I appreciate you having me on, Kyle.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
All right, you too.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. It was brought to you by Conserve. Do you run a wildlife removal business and feel like you have no freedom? You're taking the phone calls, you're doing the services, and you just don't have enough free time for yourself. Are you ready to double or triple the size of your company and build a business that can run and grow without you while steadily increasing your profits? Well, Conserve partners with businesses just like yours all over the country, and together we are building a fast-growing business around your goals and lifestyle. We can reduce your operating cost, we can increase your sales, and give you, the owner, more freedom and help you build a business that runs and grows without you. To set up an initial consultation, email us at growth@conservemail.com. That's growth@conservemail.com.